Joel Kelso. Welcome back.
Cheers, mate. Good to be back.
That's what the hour was?
Just saying his name.
Hey, quote the great Murray Walker, the less you say, the better it is.
Okay? So just for our listeners real quick, Tom's like, I'll do the intro. I've had an hour in the car to really think about it. And all you got was your own name, Joel.
I was expecting a bit more, mate.
Well, normally we go, how are you, boys? And everyone goes, boys. Mate, appreciate you coming back.
Hey, first repeat guest.
Yep.
How good's
there
that?
There you go.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And I know you've got a very busy schedule over the next week, so I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it, mate.
My pleasure, mate. My pleasure. Yeah, back for a week and, good to squeeze this in.
So what do you got planned back in Oz?
Just catching up, honestly, with the people. Try to lock in everything for next year, get that sorted, and try to regroup and come back strong in the second half as well. You know, so try to come back here and work on the things that we need to work on. And
awesome. Well, we met your manager Murray. He's a lovely fella. So I've heard you've sort of hooked up with him in the last year or so, and things have progressed really nicely for you with the contract next year, obviously.
Yeah, exactly, mate. It's just a friendship that turned into him being the manager, let's say, if we put a label on it. But really, it's just a mate that's that's helping out and making things happen behind the scenes and taking the workload off me, off worrying about that. I can just worry about going racing, try to play, win out there, and that's about it, you know. So I think that's been really important as well, just being able to focus on what I need to do.
So last time we spoke, you were living in Mallorca. Has that changed? I heard you might be living in Barcelona now.
Yeah, exactly. Now living out in Barcelona. So we just changed it up this year because you got to get adventurous, you know. If you're always staying on the same thing, then you can't expect change, you know.
Yeah.
So, we moved out to Barcelona. It's heaps different. So I'm really enjoying it out there as well, like just training with different guys. And, it's been a good experience, to be honest. Yeah.
Lots of cycling still?
Yeah, heaps of cycling and everything, but we're just doing a bit more like motocross, flat track, and that's just awesome to do with also top-level riders as well. So, I'm really, really enjoying it, mate. Like, it's just it's different experience as well, because, like, in Mallorca, we were, like, more closed off and it was just, like, us boys. And now it's, like, so many different people. I mean, maybe you rock up one day and Marquez is there, right? And you're riding with Marquez. Or then next day you rock up and we're training with, I don't know, some World Superbike riders, you know, something like that. So it's just good to be with a variety of riders. And, you can only learn from the best if you're training with them. So,
oh, that's it. Yeah. I mean, I was just having a quick chat to Murray before we jumped on. And, I've heard you got a new performance coach who trains the Marquez boys. And like, if you want to be the best, you got to train with the best and learn off the best as well.
Yeah, exactly, mate. So that was a hard thing because ever since I went to Europe, pretty much after the first year I did it alone, once I joined Leopard and stuff like that in the junior rankings and all that, I hooked up with this trainer, Angel, that I was with for 4 years. And so it was definitely hard to change. And, like, you know, it's a big step to change because you don't want to make a change, do you? Like, I mean, everyone loves their comfort zone and be in that place. So it was a decision I had to take to obviously move to Barcelona. It wasn't the choice of actually change a trainer, essentially. It was more the location because there's other opportunities out in Barcelona that Mallorca couldn't provide anymore. And it was good because it took me out of comfort zone. I think that was actually good for me. Yeah.
That's awesome. Talk to us just a little bit about the team next year. What's its Impact GP? Is that correct?
Level Up MTA.
Level Up MTA, my apologies.
Yeah.
So talk to us how that contract came around, how it started. Is it someone in that team that you know have known for a while?
Yeah, well, the first team I joined officially in Europe was in Italy. I raced in Moto3 as a wild card with MTA. And then that next year it was Leopard, but MTA was the runner, like as in the same owner and everything like that. And Leopard was just a sponsor and the connection, right? But I already had the relationship with all the people pretty much in there. And obviously the crew inside's different, but the owner and stuff. So we've always had a good contact and always been in touch. And then we started the season really well. I think we're P3 in the championship for a couple of races. And that, raised eyebrows for people. And we had quite a few offers and already we're speaking. And then honestly, the best decision for me was to go back to a place that I already know and secure the future early as well, because last year was an absolute nightmare and it was not good for anyone. So, the best option was to get it locked in straight away. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, you locked in super fast. And I'm like, yeah, but what's wrong with that? You know,
yeah,
like
yeah. Yeah,
securing
right.
my future and just focusing on the rest of this year and going ahead with it, especially since like, yeah, I'm really happy to be with the team that I've been back with. And I think we can do really great things next year. And that's what we need to do and we're aiming to do.
That's it. And like, it's good because like at least a bit the pressure's off. You don't have to worry about another ride or like your future. Like you're locked in. You can kind of just concentrate on this season and next season as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you do it, because then every time like this comes around, you hinder your results for, you know, even if you say, oh, don't let it get to me, you hinder your results a little bit, you know, yeah. Always, you know, for a minimum of 3-4 races, because it goes on for some time, you know. And yeah, honestly, I got offer already in America from a couple. Harris, so I was like, oh, look, I'm just holding off a bit. And then I was like, why am I holding off? You know, like, let's just go for this. So yeah, and then I locked it away before, I can't think, I think it was Le Mans after that. So yeah, locked that away super early. And yeah, obviously it's sad to leave the team that I'm at now. And yeah, obviously I'm really enjoying my time there with the crew, and I gelled with them really well this year, and everything was going smoothly. But yeah, things got to change sometimes. Yeah.
No, that's so good to hear. Do you find like it must make such a big difference when you're in a team and it's like a bit more of a family atmosphere where everyone just gels really well compared to obviously not being that?
Yeah, for sure. Because like at the end, we got to travel, you know, a whole year with someone. Yeah, like it's not essentially is a friend group, because if not, like, well, like we're pretty much living together. You know, every week we're seeing each other. My crew chief, I literally see every 4 days, because if we're not catching up at the racetrack, I catch up with him outside the racetrack for a coffee. Because if not, like we're like the closest mates now, because it's the people we see the most. And it's super, super important, because, you know, like in the last couple of races, it's been hard, right? Just like for feeling on the bike and whatever or whatnot. So it's really good to have that relationship that you're so close with your crew chief and all that, because, you know, we're meeting outside the race weekends and we catch up trying to figure out a strategy, how we're going to move forward and do better. You know, and that's when you can make one step over the others, you know, because others are, you know, don't have that relationship with their crew chief or whatever, because it's more just like a work and then that's it, you know. And it's really, really important to have that friendship. And also, like, you can imagine, if you're mates with someone, you want your mate to do better, you know. So he's out there working as hard as possible, but not for the paycheck. He's working out there to make it better and give me the opportunity to fight for race wins.
That's it. And, like, it's trust, isn't it? Like, trust is a big thing with mates, I guess. And if you got the trust with him, then you can go so far.
And you see it in motorsport all the time where, like, when the team's gelling, everything's going so much better and everyone trusts each other and it just produces better results. We actually spoke about this, I think, last week. Totally off topic, but like we look at Red Bull F1 team and in the off season and their team at the moment, it's just gone, you know, there's so many issues. But and then on the racetrack now, there's issues and they're not going as well. So it always goes hand in hand.
100%. Yeah. If you upset the tree, it's not gonna flow well. And like I said, with all the races that you're together as well, you can't have that like 4 weeks off to take a reset. You know, when you're like sick of hanging out with one person, you're like, I need a break. We don't get that, you know. You can't have that because you're literally 3 days later got to see him. Because the next weekend, but for us, it finishes Monday because we fly back and then we're back together on Wednesday, you know, Arvo. So it's literally 2 days, you know.
How hard is it on the teams with all these races this year? Is it like, I remember being in the back of the paddock at Phillip Island and like back-to-back-to-back races, they were like, we're spent, you know? How hard is it on them?
Yeah, it's hard, honestly. It's super, super hard. But in one aspect is hard, but we're putting on a show for everyone.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a pretty cool place to be as well.
It's a cool place to be, and a lot of people love it, you know? And like, I mean, depends, you know, where your mindset is at that moment. Like I said, though, if everything's flowing, like right now with the team, everyone's super happy inside and everyone has a good relationship, you're happy traveling around, you know. You don't mind it. You're traveling with your mates. You're going to see the world and you're racing bikes. Like, what else can you ask for?
I know, true.
You know, like maybe it was a little bit more hard. Example, last year the relationship wasn't as great in their environment. Not with my crew chief, but with the atmosphere in the team. And yeah, it was a bloody nightmare. Bloody nightmare. Yeah, the end of the year was just everyone, like, we didn't want to be with them. So we're like, what do we do? You know, and we're trying to not travel together. Like, we're trying to go our separate ways. And it's just shit.
You got to be it's a good team at the end of the day. Yeah. That's the thing. Exactly. It's a team. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were so excited for you with that contract next year. Like, because I think when Daniel and I were talking to you last time, it was a you were searching for a good result. And the start of this year, two couple of fifth places, you're up there in nearly every race. Like, it's such a good thing to see, and it makes it exciting for the Aussies as well. Like, we talk about you all the time.
Yeah,
we're like, we love watching Moto 3 because we get to see Joel race around.
Yeah, and because now we know you, it's like, yeah, even more exciting.
It's so exciting.
It's so fun. and Moto 3, like, I don't even know how more can get more exciting, because every race is just fucking wild.
I know.
It's a lottery, isn't it?
It is. Oh. I know, and it's like. And watching that race, like, you go, oh, why can't you do this? Why has that person done that? And then, like, it just must be so intense in the pack.
Yeah. Oh, what are you thinking when you're in those front packs?
Well, it's hard to think at that time because, you know, one person's crashing that way and another one's gone that way. You know, it's always a big group and anything, you know, can happen at any time. So it's, I think you just got to improvise a bit, don't you? You just got to.
Yeah. Something that really stuck with me last time you said, If I was racing in Australia, they would see me as the most aggressive rider out there. Exactly. But when you're up against all those little Spanish kids,
exactly,
just like built into them to be just overly aggressive, isn't it?
Or that one little fast Colombian.
Yeah. It's just a different breed. Yeah, you know? Like, as in, like, they grew up doing that, so that's their natural, you know, instinct, just to be, you know, out there racing. Yeah.
Well, before you got here, Tom, we were talking about it, and they. In Spain, it's like a part of the school curriculum almost is racing.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah.
They have like a, you know, like CEDA here in Australia. They have that pretty much over there. And like example, Ethan, he went to that school and then he'd come to training. I'd be at training. They bring him with a van and the bikes and everything for him to ride. Like, it's literally like our AFL or something.
Yeah. And they can, like, you can just go to a racetrack and just get van, unpack and race. It's like in Australia, you have to get permits and this and that.
That's what Will's saying. It rains, everything gets cancelled.
You can't go to like many tracks and just ride, you know?
Yeah, I know. That was a big thing. Like, and they're open all the time. Like, you can just go there and pay an entry fee and go. It's like so different here.
Every day it's open, so.
Yeah, that's nuts. Or like, as you said, you got like a group chat of people, you rent out that track and, you know, you got your own personal track and you just split it with whoever you're going with. Like, how good's that?
Exactly. Like, you make a phone call and you can have the track completely to yourself for all day for a couple hundred bucks, you know. You split that between everyone and you set, you know.
We need to buy some land in Spain and just rent it out to GP riders.
You're paying $30 or something and you get it all day for riding. Like, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, how good's that?
$30 breakfast on the way to the track these days.
Good point.
That's crazy. It's $200 to ride at Broadford, and Broadford's not that great.
And you're spending $500 at Phillip Island, I would say. Yeah. And that's without a you've got to be in the back of the paddock. That's not the pit lane or anything like that.
That'll probably be with a garage.
$500
there or thereabouts. Yeah, but then you've got to factor in if you're
tires.
Quick, you're doing tires, you're doing
chain
sprockets. Like,
weather, you know, you got the weather.
Phillip Island, you can go in the middle of summer, it's going to be terrible. You just don't know what you're going to get. So,
but to be fair, that's just like cost of living at the moment. Like, well, they have to.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
It's impossible. Like, I had a ham and cheese toast this morning and a coffee, and it cost me like $24.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It's literally a highway robbery.
Is it expensive here in Australia?
Oh, mate, it is outrageous. Yeah, honestly. Like, I've never seen it like so bad like this year.
So Barcelona, talk to us where you live. Is it like a little town or is it like, or are you living in the heart of the city?
Yeah, so I live in like a city called Sabadell. It's like 20 minutes from Barcelona and then probably about 30, 40 minutes from where I train every day. And it's good for one reason. Like, then I could live where I'm training, but it's like a little bit more further out and I'd rather live around the city. It's just a better atmosphere.
A bit more vibrant.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, you're going out for dinner and
you can go out for dinner.
No, he just eats at home.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I hope you're out for dinner and enjoying the nightlife.
Like, for sure. But like, then we're not home for much. So to be honest, I actually enjoy eating at home because you're not home much. You know? Like, to get that home cooked meal is decent, you know. Especially when, like, every week we're traveling now, so.
Yeah, I mean, as I touched on earlier, it would take its toll. Like, it's amazing. It's an amazing sport and it's an amazing career. But living out of a suitcase 6 months of the year, it'll weigh on you.
Yeah, for sure. But you know what's strange? Like, is in, I love the flyaway races. Like, the Asia route come back to Australia, obviously. Yeah. It's also one point that helps a lot. But I love that sort of, like, Asia route trips, you know, each week racing in a different country. I really enjoy it. Like, the European scene's obviously awesome, but my favourite is the Asia route because, like, it's something completely different. It's the lifestyle is completely different. It's like...
Yeah, it's
two different things.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Mate, you're taking the scooter, you're going chasing monkeys around, you know. Like, literally last year, we were on a scooter for, like, $5 a day or whatever, and going up in the mountains with your shoes and a helmet on, you lay, you know, chasing around, you know, monkeys.
Yeah,
and,
that's cool.
You know, like, putting monkeys in your teammate's room and stuff. Actually, I rented a monkey for like, I can't remember. It's like 25 Aussie bucks, is that anyone?
Is that what they call them these days?
Yeah, exactly. And just like put it in the room and stuff. It's jump around.
Fuck it up, really?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that's wild.
It's cold.
We had a good, like, talking about the flyaway races. I think we did our pod before you came out last year. Was it the middle of the season?
No,
it was
post
season.
Oh, it was after season. Yeah. Yeah, because I think we already spoke to you about obviously that win, that podium at Phillip Island. Yeah. Like, that was insane. James, you weren't here for that, but like the winds, the howling that day, you just came out and just.
Yeah, that was wild.
It was wild. And we were actually sitting, I already told this story, but we were sitting at turn one with like some family members yours. Yeah. It was just like a crazy experience
some
for us.
Cousins or something.
Talk us through that day again, just for the people who haven't listened to the first pod, because it was a crazy, crazy day.
Well, I hope to remake it this year.
But, you will. You'll win this year.
Yeah. I think I got to top it up and win now. So, it was, like you said, it was a special moment for not only me, but for everyone, for the Australian people. It was just incredible to be on the podium at home GP. Like, I mean, you can't ask for much more. And obviously the conditions were tricky, but all weekend top three. So,
would they be the hardest conditions you've ever raced in?
Yeah, I think anyone would say the same. Like, it was pretty bad, wasn't it?
The wind,
like,
that was shocking that day.
Who went off on turn one?
Vietti
just got blown off.
Blown straight off and straight over the handlebars. Almost end up in the Bass Strait.
Yeah.
Remember on the outlap, four people crashed.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Really good. Two of them had concussions.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
It was bad,
Is there a concussion rule in?
Yeah, there is, but I don't know what happened that day. Yeah, it was a big, like, thing blow up thing after, because they let both of them ride with concussion.
They're probably like, oh, babbity, send him out.
Gold, you know? But no, they were definitely tricky conditions, weren't they? Like,
man, it was hard enough being a fan. I don't know how you're on a bike.
I don't know how they let us race, to be honest. I mean, for me, it was perfect. But
I know.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what you want, those mixed conditions, I suppose, and show your real skill.
Nah, you always prefer the dryer. Like, and especially, like, I'd way prefer it, because, like, the podium would have been so much more enjoyable.
Oh, true.
Dryer podium, showed, like, fuck. I got this podium because I was, like, fast enough, you know. The tricky condition to go, oh, yeah, this, that, you know, like.
Yeah, we did miss like running on the track after the main race and stuff this year. I
mean, that's probably what I was most disappointed about.
Yeah.
So I'm keen for this year, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I know.
Yeah,
this year will be good. Dry race. Race win.
Pole, pass,
exactly.
Slap.
Exactly. I can see it happening.
Grand slam. Yeah. It's such a special track, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Is it the best in the world?
For me, yeah. It's special. It's so fast and flowing. It's like, like you said, they drawed that track or something. They didn't make it with a computer, and that's why it's so special, you know. Something like that. So it's iconic. And every rider says that it's one of their favourites. So,
It's
one of the specialist tracks in the world.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah,
we're just lucky enough to have that in our front doors.
I know, it's amazing. We had a pod with Travis Yule, the CEO of Grand Prix Australia. And we're saying to him, like, it is the best track, you know. And, like, if they went to the bend or something, it'd be a travesty, you know. Because, like, even though the facilities are probably not up to scratch to where you go in Europe and stuff, it's just that racing is just the best.
Yeah. Well, they're making a new track, aren't they, now, though?
Which they are. Yeah.
Interesting to see, but it's going to be sad if Phillip Island leaves and end up on the other track. I think they will.
We'll pick it.
They have to.
We'll pick it at the front if they take it away.
Yeah. Well, so I think they will, because at the end, why would you build another track then if not?
Where's this other track?
It's next to the airport.
Mm.
Really? This is the first time hearing about this.
Yeah, because they want to do it, because then it's obviously closer to the city. Because they want to make it more like F1, especially even more now with Liberty Media. And it makes sense, because, like, Phillip Island's like, incredible, don't get me wrong, and the track's incredible, but really it is a nightmare to get to, you know. For it's us, it's all right, but like, how good would it be able to get on a bus and go from the city to the track? Yeah, like a shuttle bus.
Maybe for the riders.
I don't mean for us, I mean for, like, the fans, because then more people would come out.
We love it. We're gonna have hearts down there though, John.
Sure. Also, me, but the thing is like, they want spectators.
They do.
That's the thing.
For the sport, you're saying, I get it. You're saying it would be better for the sport
for us,
in Australia.
Like Aussies, we want to keep it there. But for the sport itself,
to
it make needs to it be more. Closer. Yeah, exactly. And that's the way to do it.
I really see this Liberty Media takeover as a massive advantage for you guys.
Oh, it's already.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just the way that they do the structure of everything, like, as in record numbers every race. I mean, I know last year that was like that, but that was just because of after COVID.
Yeah.
Now it's literally happened just because of promotion and
yeah.
They the structure of doing it, like as in they got the mentality the same as like with F1. They prefer more people, less ticket pricing. They make money from like people buying drinks or whatnot, you know. And that is how it should be. I remember, when was it, last year or something, they there was almost no one at Mugello because they put the ticket price up after COVID.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
I remember we were talking about that last year, and like there was just massive gaps in the, you could see it in the hill where, like, traditionally.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
And this year, it wasn't back to its full, but also we don't have Rossi anymore. Like, that was the main reason it was so big. And then, it's already doing way better, and I think England will be a big event, you know, because F1 last weekend was $500,000, 500,000.
Yeah, they got 500,000, which is wild, and a crazy result for the British as well with Hamilton winning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then in France, what do we have? 290. So I think soon we'll be in that bracket of, you know, F1 that we can get 500,000.
I know. Every race they're breaking the record. Yeah. I think Jerez was funny because they announced
the wrong numbers.
They released the capacity rather than what they actually got or something.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they had to go back on what they said.
I think it was like 80 or 100,000 people off almost.
It was a lot. But I think they can't fit that many. Like, it's a small sort of a track, I suppose.
The French, though, like Le Mans, they get up and about and they're singing the national anthem. It's amazing.
Massive. Yeah, it's massive. Le Mans is like a weekend that it's like special, you know?
Yeah.
It's the one weekend that like it's probably horrible for the riders, though, because like if we sleep at the track in like a motorhome or whatever, can't sleep. Like it's literally just chainsaws and bikes going.
I never realised this. I always thought it was Mugello was the crazy place.
It used to be, but now Mugello is like, to be fair, Mugello was quite a crazy issue because everyone's got the chainsaws now. So it's like the new thing. A chainsaw with a massive exhaust pipe.
Yeah.
24 hours a day, just by smacking the thing. Yeah. Yes. So, but Le Mans like that, and they, I don't know how many motorbikes they would go through, mate. They'd blow up that many engines. Like, literally, you just listen in the bikes the whole time on the limiter, you know.
Jeez.
Too bad for the bike.
I saw a video, they must have had like hotels or something near the track, and this guy backed in, he's like old Jigs 1000. Backed into the door, and this guy and his missus were sleeping in the bed, and then they just did a massive burnout and like smoked the whole room, and like the chicks cracking and yelling. I'm just like, oh my god,
good on him. But
I know I heard a story from my crew chief. He reckons like it used to be, it's a little bit better now, but they used to like light cars on fire.
That's insane.
Yeah, so like you'd buy like $1,000 like heap of crap, you know. And then just go light them fire, you know, like, and everyone gets around with a motorbike. So, yeah, that's mental.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Absolutely mental. Yeah, yeah.
So Le Mans are craziest, you reckon, for the year? Most parties?
For the most parties and stuff, for sure. Where else would be? Jerez is always quite big, obviously.
That looked wild this year, actually. It looked cool to be at.
Yeah, Jerez. And Misano is quite good as well. Not really for the people, but there's like as in there's not that many people because the capacity is not that big.
Yeah.
But they have like the main street that's like 10 minutes away, and that's always full.
Yeah, that would be cool. So that's why we love Phillip Island as well. You go down the main street. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, exactly.
So Misano, two races in a row this year. When did you guys find? Did you find out about that a few weeks ago?
Literally found out. Really? Like I knew because they said like a little bit about Qatar or Portugal. Qatar is like 42 degrees,
yeah,
right?
I heard.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
I don't even know why they even thought it was gonna be possible there, but anyways. Especially like coming back here, I bloody hopped out in Dubai and literally walked from the bus to the plane to the bus, and I was like, glad we're not racing, And then they said Portugal, but it doesn't make sense. Like, why would you do that? You'd be better off just staying at the same racetrack and then flying straight from there to Lombok in Indonesia. So makes sense. I would have preferred that they try to find a race in Europe, outside of Europe. Only because, like, if not, we're just always in Europe. You know, it's like the superbikes now.
There's one round outside of Europe, and it's Australia.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It would have been good if they put Australia the bend, another race.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That would have been good, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
But I think that's never going to happen.
Oh, we're too woke here. We're putting too much money or something. It's bullshit. But anyway.
We wouldn't want to give them enough.
Yeah, I know. It's just something. But I thought Hungary was supposed to be the reserve race. Like, whatever happened to that?
Track safety.
Yeah, right, okay.
I believe, they never got... I don't know, like, a lot of politics are behind it, you know?
So, yeah,
like,
of course.
They don't want to change their idea on, like, some safety thing. And then you just have no hope, you know.
So, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
as soon as that word gets brought up.
I think it was in India, they had the the government change or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the politics there, we couldn't do that. So it was a bit of a nightmare, but honestly, it happens, you know.
Yeah.
It's all a part of it. And so it's difficult to build a racetrack for all. To race bikes, so
well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, you know, you need runoff, and there's obviously street racing and stuff's impossible. Yeah. So, what do you reckon of the most, like the modern MotoGP? What do you think of this season? Like, is it just wild in the paddock being there?
Well, yeah, it would be. It's interesting to see now with Marquez back at the front, like calls that, and it's good to see. And now they've updated the rules for when was it 26, 27?
Yeah, 27.
I think that'll be really, really good to see. Back to a little bit better old school style, like as in less with the aerodynamics and all that sort of stuff.
You're a fan of it?
I mean, I love what they're doing now because it's awesome to see. Like, it's kind of like their finest in like how much development goes
it's a pinnacle,
into it. But at the same time, I don't want to be controversial, but you don't see any comments really about riders at the moment. Like in MotoGP, it's always like, okay, my brand's not doing well enough.
Yeah, it's always about the bike.
My bike's not good enough to be at the front. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be good when it brings it back and everyone's on the more or less like a same playing field. It's like in Moto 3 and Moto 2. Like, okay, it definitely makes a difference, the bike. You know, you can say, okay, I didn't feel well with the bike. Mm. You know, like, every now and again. But at one point, also, you got to be like, okay, you know, it's also like a group effort, you know, bike and the rider, you know. It'll be good when that comes back, you know, a little bit back into just how it used to be, like, you know, that rider's the best, you know, or, you know, that rider's figured it out, you know. And it comes just down to setup, which setup definitely makes a difference on a race weekend and is a difference of being at the front or the back.
Mm.
But I guess like now, and it's not just the riders, like it's not the riders that are doing that. It is how it is because you can see it's a regular thing, you know. The one brand is at the back now.
Yeah.
You know? So it's obviously not the rider. So I'm not saying it's the rider, but I'm saying like it would be good once the rules come back to where it gives opportunity for be the rider that makes a difference, not just a brand.
Yeah, we've spoken about this over the last few weeks that like it's probably – it used to be 60% rider, 40% bike. Now it's probably reversed the other way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, even more, it'd be – now MotoGP would be 70, 80% just the bike.
Yeah.
Because like at the end it's – there's only so much like with the era that they're doing and then the updates that they can do to try to make it up to catch the number one brand at the moment, which is Ducati, obviously, is so hard because it takes so much development. It doesn't just happen overnight. You know, they have to try to figure out what's actually wrong with it. And then they got 6 months to try to produce the part, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. Like
the season's over.
You look at KTM, they're like, they just nearly got there and then they've just fallen off massively compared to what I suppose Aprilia and what Ducati are doing.
Well, yeah, in one aspect of the thing, but it will come back around because, like, from my understanding, they can't restrain the effort they're putting in. Like, Ducati, the amount of budget it takes to develop and to be the number one brand and always, like, going above everyone else and creating new things is too much to you know, keep that sustainable. Mm. So they always bring it back. You know, so probably for the last 2 years, they haven't developed as much a bike as what they did 2 years ago when they made the massive step, was it? Yeah, something like that, And the other brands are having to spend all this money to do it. And you see the brands that excel is like KTM and stuff like that because they have that big backing behind them and they have the knowledge of, they have their F1 Red Bull and stuff that like, because now like they have a lot of F1s working in the paddock with aerodynamics and stuff. Obviously, there is a Aprilia, but the Aprilia doesn't have the budget like they do with KTM and Ducati. Honda will find its way back, although I think that now with that new rules, I'm pretty sure they're just going to wait off.
It makes the most sense.
You're not going to spend a couple hundred million euro just to try to fix it for 1 year. But
and maybe get back to 10th or something like that.
Yamaha, I think they will keep trying to figure it out until the moment that they change back to 990.
If you're on a winning... hypothetically, a winning Moto 2 bike, and you got offered a contract right now for a Honda, would you take it?
100%.
Yeah. Or you want to be in that main class?
You just want to be in MotoGP, don't you? And also, like, then you only have to do the best result that bike can. And people can see that, with that bike, that team that you're with, let's say, if you're beating your teammate and you're top Honda or you're fighting for the top Honda, right? You're obviously doing something all right.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't necessarily, okay, it looks bad, you're not in the front, but like you said,
it's they don't look at that
70 or 80% of the bike now. So then they can understand how it is, you know. And I mean, like what are Moto 2 riders meant to do? Like they're not just going to stay in Moto 2. Like they also need to, you know, step up and live.
That was the interesting thing though of Iogura, because apparently he kind of got like a contract for Honda and he turned it down because he just kind of looked at it like, well, who knows what he looked at it, but from the outside it looked like, yeah, no thanks, not right now.
But I don't think that had to do with that he's to a Honda. I think it was the conditions that they put.
Okay.
I could be wrong there, but what I understand is that there's like the Honda obviously do that agreement from when they go from the Asia Tank Cup, all the way Moto 3, Moto 2, and stuff like that. And he wanted to get out of that. And I don't know what actually it is, the reason behind it, but there's actually a couple that want to get out of that, and not be in it because it's locked in for whatever the whole time you're in MotoGP, I think.
Interesting.
And a few people got out, like Ogura and stuff, and that's why he went to MT Helmets. It's happened before. I can't remember the rider, but it happens a bit because the problem is that I don't think that, like, they don't know. First of all, Iogura wasn't getting paid where he should have been getting paid, like as in for fighting for a championship. But I understand because the brand Honda have invested in him. You know what I mean?
So they
took the investment, but then as a rider, you look at it and go, yeah, but that doesn't pay my bills.
Yeah.
So that's where the relationship goes sour. You know, I think the way that they put it to me is you go to MotoGP this next year with us or you never go with us.
Yeah, right. Just and seems like such a career killer. I think
his attitude was, well, if you're going to put a gun to my head like
Is that what it's coming from? So it's like a bit of a fuck you. I'll make my decision, exactly. Not be forced my hand.
Exactly. Because you're forcing his hand. You can't go with us or you're never going to come with us.
He's had his chances though.
Would you be? But at the end, if he's fighting for the championship, whereas he can go to a better bike. Which is fucked, you know. He can go to a Yamaha Yamaha, it's not much better, but like I mean, Aprilia or, you know, Ducati even, you know, if the right opportunity comes. Yeah. But it's just a matter of time. MotoGP is about that, and that's what happened with me. Mm. You know, like we almost didn't have a ride, and then we came back, and then start the season with top three in the championship.
Yeah.
So the things can change super fast in motorbike world, and you know how it all works. You just got to be persistent and always be there and then try and fight and never giving up.
You just have to be in the paddock, and that's what we spoke about last time. You go, I had to fork out some cash and find sponsors and stuff, but I needed to be there this year because otherwise it was, who knows, could have been it.
Exactly, mate.
You could have been working with Maranello and Foo Sports.
No, you don't want to be doing that.
Exactly.
You don't want to be doing that. No.
Working with Joe.
You're talking your ear off all day.
Oh, mate, couldn't have had anything worse.
Where's the ciabatta?
Nah, no good. Prefer be racing bikes, man.
100%. It's just that Repsol Honda seat just seems like a, for me, from, and I think we all agree, it's just a career killer. And look, you look at Mir and Marini at the moment, like, I have a joke that like they're just purposely losing the front end like halfway through the race because they just don't want to be there anymore.
I feel sorry for Mir, seriously.
It's hard mentally. That's a problem. Yeah. Like, in, you go into the project with a clear idea, but like being not at the front... It's hard for us, because we're every person that's there, like, we're super competitive, you know.
If we play
tennis, like, I'll be upset if you beat me, but I'll be genuinely upset. So imagine that's what, like I said, like with the bikes, it's so hard not being at the front, but because the bike's not where it needs to be, you know what I mean? So just mentally it would be super difficult being in their position. But like you said, also it's a different story because they've already had their career, they've won the world championship, like in your example. So then to go back to that would be super, super hard. Like as a rookie stepping up, you're getting the opportunity to ride MotoGP, so you'd just be happy either way, wouldn't you? But it would be really hard if you've already
been there, done that, it's different ball game.
Winning a world champion, winning races, and then not even coming close to the points, you know, so.
Yeah, it'd be different. It'd be so difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'd really hurt the ego.
He's your social media manager's taking photos.
Joey's taking it.
Strutting around.
I know, he's not supposed to be here tonight. I think he's saying, no, don't look at me.
There we go.
Oh, goodness.
When you see Moto 3 riders jump up to Moto 2, it always seems like a big jump, as in Moto, it might take a year, 2 years, 3 years to really, I guess, prove themselves and be at the front of the pack. There's obviously a few outliers over the year, but what do you reckon that is?
Depends on the rider. I can't say much more about it because it is surprising, actually. And like, obviously, there's many factors into it. Most of the time, the riders that are fast alone, like that ride alone in Moto 3, when they step up, they can do well because Moto 2 is about being fast. Mm. Like I said, Moto 3, you get a slipstream, you can do well. You know, or you have a fast bike and you can do well.
Yeah.
Moto 2, they're all the same. All the same bike. Not one thing different. And literally, it's whoever is fastest wins. It's not about being super, stupidly aggressive because it's literally the way that the spikes are in style of riding is the fastest lap times over the race will win, which seems true to say, but in Moto3, it's not like that.
No, and you could just... So, there's an element of luck being in the right position at the right time on the right at the last lap as well. And exactly. Yeah.
But I think also the big thing is if you cannot adapt to riding many different bikes, then it's even more difficult when you step up.
Yeah.
I've been like, I like a lot change bikes, you know. Like this, I get good at all the bikes, you know.
Yeah.
Like I'll ride anything just to be better at something, you know. Like I'll try a different bike. Maybe it's not the best bike to train on, but it's a different bike, so it's something to learn, you know.
That's a smart way of looking at it, I guess, adapting your riding style. Now it's a really good way, yeah.
You have to. If not, what are you going to do? One day you've got to go MotoGP. You can't ride the Moto3 like a MotoGP bike.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to adapt. If not, like, you're not going anywhere. You can't just have a fixed idea that, yeah, my riding style is going to be work for that. No, it's not how it works. You know, or even this year, we had to change it because the tyres are different than Pirelli.
Oh, yeah, true. How do you find that?
Well, it's good, but like, for example, I'm needing to adapt my riding style, and that's why the last three races have been, I don't know.
Let's
put it blank, and Bean's quite shit, you know. So,
I mean, not shit, I wouldn't say that. You've still been up there, but you haven't been where we want. Where you want to be.
That's just about adapting the riding style and going from, you know, you've got to find their way. And the good part is that, like, I'm really determined to be able to, you know, adjust my riding style and do it. So,
what's changed for you?
I'll figure out the way to get through it.
What's different? What do you have to do? How do you have to ride the bike differently with the new tyres? You've got to sort of get it up on its.
You have to understand the tyre, and at the moment I haven't been able to figure out how it needs to be ridden exactly.
Yep.
But there's many things. You've got to keep the temperature in the tyre because if not, the pressure drops a lot, which is really, really important. The tyre degradation is a different way. It goes down and then it gets to a certain point and it just drops.
Notice that in Moto 2.
Typical Pirelli.
You have to save the tyre.
Like Alonso Lopez in Moto 2.
That's the way he rides, but that's different.
It's just amazing. The drop off of tyres is just incredible.
Cool. Exactly, yeah. So you got to manage that, and yeah, it's everything together. Like, okay, you start to get a bit of movement, but it's flexing the tyre because it's so soft, the tyre, which is good for, goes super fast. We're 1 second or more faster at every track, you know, every lap. But then you've got to learn how to adapt to it and ride around it.
Yeah, like a look at Tony Arbolino, Moto 2. He was fighting for a championship, and then he's finally starting to get it now. But tyres, it's just tyre talk. It's just the most important, one of the most important aspects, isn't it?
Exactly. But that's another thing. Like Tony Arbolino, he's super talented and stuff, and he's figuring out now how to ride the tyre. Okay, it took him time, sure, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's not a time thing. As long as you get it sorted eventually, you're going somewhere, you know?
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, the people that don't improve is the problem, you know? You're always improving. Maybe one person takes shorter time than the other, but at one point, as long as you're improving, you're going to arrive one day, you know?
Yeah, what's your thoughts on this tyre pressure with MotoGP? Is it just, from a rider's point of view, it's obviously a safety thing, but like, it seems like it's spoiling the racing to a certain extent.
Yeah, but they're trying to get the maximum out of it, you know?
Yeah.
Run less tyre pressure, they get better grip, so that's what they're trying to run on the limit, you know. And like you said, it's a safety issue, so they have to, you know. But if they move the limit up, it wouldn't change it, you know. And they can't take the limit away because they'd run no pressure, and then it can become a safety issue. So, how do you fix it?
Well, that's true. Well, we had a good point from who was it? Was it Cam was talking about this? Like, Pirelli should just set the tyre. Michelin should just set the tyre pressures on the grid.
That was a fan that said that.
On the grid, put a technician on every bike, set it a certain thing, and then let them race. So then it takes it out of the team's hands.
Maybe, but at the same time, you can't because, example, I like more pressure in the tyre.
Yeah.
And less flex. You know what I mean? So it's rider preference also.
Yeah, interesting.
Because you can go up in pressure.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and that does one thing, and the other thing does another. So you got to weigh up the option. It's the same as like, actually, okay, I'm going to take the technician away from you from the setup because it's the same as the tyre. You know? I like my bike set up different to what my teammate does, you know. Yeah. So
it's good. It's a very good
point. Hard, you know. It's a hard one to think. But I didn't even realize it must have just started to be a thing, was it? Because I didn't realize it until I seen Aston where Marquez and all that are sitting up to go behind to get more temperature. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, you know. It's still been like,
has that been always a thing?
It's not to that second, extent.
Second year, isn't it?
The second year
with second the year. Warnings and stuff.
Yeah.
It's and it really showcased it in that race because, like, that's not MotoGP.
Yeah.
Like, and it was frustrating from a fan's point of view, like, yeah, seeing them, you know, seeing Marquez on his screen saying, you know, go, your tire pressure is getting too low, you got to go behind the right. Like, that's not racing.
Yeah,
so exactly. It was just interesting. I thought, get your point of view on it, but there's no quick fix.
Yeah, that's a problem. There's no quick fix to it. I wish there was, but a lot of things you just got to, try things and hopefully they end up being a solution. But yeah, I couldn't tell you what it would be right now, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, they talk about safety, but it's not safe if Marquez or someone's sitting up mid-corner or whatever. It's not someone else pass, you know, that's not.
But at least that's in your control, you know.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
The tyre pressure, if they drop it and then it pops the tyre or whatever, you know, if you're doing 300k an hour,
it'll
be fatal, you know. If he sits up, he's choosing to sit up at that point, you know.
Yeah. Good point.
It's also not safe, but, at least it's in your control.
Yeah.
You know?
So plans, mate? I mean, obviously next year we've got a new team and then Moto2, MotoGP eventually, obviously.
Yeah, hopefully last year Moto3 can really put on the results and deliver and make that step that I think I can and I need.
Mm.
And then go to Moto2 and see how we crack on there, really.
That's awesome.
I think from our point of view, and I want to get your take on this, you'd really suit a Moto2 bike.
I bloody hope so. Mm. I bloody hope so. I love riding the bigger bikes. I ride Superbike a bit. I have a bit and I really, really enjoy it. I enjoy more of the riding as well, to be honest with you. Like, I really, really enjoy riding a bigger bike, sliding it around, but sliding around with the power.
Yeah.
Moto3, I don't like to slide it much, but because it's not with the power, it's just about, like, the momentum. Mm. Power sliding with, like, as in with it under your control, I enjoy it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I think I enjoy it, but... Like I said, everyone's different. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. For
sure, I'll have some fun. And I think in any case, like, I've shown I'd never give up, you know. Yeah, and, okay, like, the progress has been a little bit slower in Moto3 than what we wanted to. Like, we've been there, obviously, fast enough, but we've been struggling for one thing or another. But we've never given up and we're always coming better and better and better. And I think everyone can see that. And the determination is what the people love about me. And you know, that's... Well, I just got to keep doing, just keep digging away, mate. Keep digging away, and I think it'll eventually come.
Oh, yeah, it'll come. And, like, it's, as I said, as you touched on earlier, like, it's just so exciting seeing an Aussie up there because, unfortunately, Jack's had a hard year and a half, so hopefully he'll improve. You got any insight of where he's going next year?
I believe he'll find a seat for sure.
Good.
I got the same... same idea than everyone else, but I think it would suit well, probably like a Aprilia track house or something like that.
Yeah, gross.
Oh yeah, or obviously Pramac, he's been there before, so that's possible there. And the good buddies, like, he has a really good relationship with everyone, which is important.
Yeah, relationships.
Because not only we race bikes, you got to get on with your crew. Like I said, there's many races, so yeah, if you're bringing up the atmosphere, like you said, good atmosphere normally makes results happen as well.
Yeah.
And that's probably not helping him now as well, like, as in he wouldn't be in the best atmosphere at KDM after what happened. I mean, I know the feeling. You know, getting told you stay and then you're out. So it's not an easy one to deal with.
Yeah, they've got a different direction, KDM, for next year. I just couldn't believe the riders they've got.
Yeah, and it was a blind side.
Yeah,
it
was. And, like, it's just, I don't know, they just must have clenched the fist in the head office there and going, we're getting this and we're moving in a different direction. So
yeah, they're quite hard with their decisions, but
yeah,
at the end of the day, if you look at it as a business, all the decisions they made was quite a good one. If you look at it as a business aspect of things, and I mean, yeah, what they got, Maverick, you know, like, it's Maverick's going to be good on a KDM. I think it'll be good for him.
Yeah,
we've got some fans questions for Jolly, don't we?
Yeah.
Inundated.
I was just going to ask before we do that, what do you do when you're not talking bikes, thinking bikes? Do you have any other side hobbies that you like doing, or
honestly, not, mate?
Yeah,
do motorbikes. Like, obviously, you train heaps with the cycling stuff, so I like the cycling. But I actually, you know what? I started this year in Spain. They have paddle. It's like, I think it's called Pickle Hill.
Pickleball?
Yeah, is that it?
Paddles are a little bit different, but it's similar.
Okay.
It's like a small tennis, but like with wooden bats.
Yeah, but over there it's different. It's like, it's like not a tennis racket, but it's like in the middle of them two.
And
you bounce it off the wall and stuff.
Okay.
But it's similar rules as pickleball. Yeah. So, and I've never played pickleball, but I played the paddle this year and I actually enjoy it. I was loving it. I was been doing it for a fair bit.
It seems like a lot of like sports people are playing.
Everyone's doing it.
It must be like a low injury or something. Everyone's got around
it's
it.
Super, super addicting. It's really fun. Yeah.
It hasn't really taken off yet, but it's like, you know, Australia, like it happens in America or Europe and then it takes like 3 years and then it will be obsessed here.
Well, it's been there for ages. I've always seen it. I'll never go playing. Yamanaka actually is the one that introduced me. He called me one day. He's you want to come play paddle? We have a spare spot. I'm like, yeah, I'll go check it out, you know?
Yeah.
It was so good. And I brought myself a racket and a ball and then I was like, so I got all the team in there and then now I'm just going heaps with my team, like as in like my data guy and stuff like that.
That's cool.
And I go with his brother and all that. Yeah, so that's good.
That's so good.
That's cool. I guess it's kind of good to have something else to take your mind off.
It's good for disconnect. Like you just, you're having fun. Yeah. And you know, he's like when you're with the boys and having a good time. So, and it's a bit of exercise and good. Good laugh, that's for sure, you know.
That's all right. Like, we were talking to we did a pod, Daniel and I, with Remy, and then we were talking about, like, drift cars and stuff like that. And it's funny because you can really see his face light up talking about something different because I guess you're always talking about bikes 24/7, like, as much as you would love it. I'm sure you would like a little bit of a change.
For sure, for sure. Like, it's good to disconnect 100%.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's hard for us to disconnect, because always thinking of how I can improve and do better, you know, so it's difficult, but... Yeah, it's definitely good to disconnect and be able to go.
Yeah, play, it was like games, Cam Donald, who were talking about that last week, and he's like, you know, 3 months out, or so wound up just thinking about the Isle of Man TT, and it was just like, gee, you can see his eyes, like,
crazy.
Off season's so hard for us. Like, as in, I get to like mid January, and I'm like dying to get back on the bike. You know, like, I can't think more about how I'd want to get back on the bike. You know, drivers, you're insane. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's it's your passion, it's your love, isn't it? So and it's your career as well. Like that's the thing. And to wake up every day and do something that you love is an amazing thing. Because we sure as hell don't like our day jobs.
Speaking of ourselves.
Well, me and Tom then, that's for sure.
Yeah, me and Tom. Oh goodness.
Oh, that's funny. All right, I'll get some
I hope these questions are good.
Well, so do we.
Well, someone said, are you going to Moto 2 next year?
I won't out him.
Come on, yeah, we won't.
Wasn't it Matt Ald?
Yeah, it was. No, Matt is a good friend of the pod, but just didn't get the Instagram post with Joel with the new team.
Fake fan.
Get to follow me on Instagram for it.
Yeah, exactly right.
At Gavin 1975, how do you manage tyres and still go fast? Question from someone who's never raced.
That's actually a great question.
Yeah, it is.
Different riding style that works is like punch in and punch out. That can also save tire because you're less time on the edge of the tire. But it depends, because if you race with the medium side of the tire, it doesn't have as much like edge grip anyway. So you can just pretty much ride it the same, and you just got to try to be a little bit more smooth. With the S tire, you'd have to make it punch in, punch out. You don't want to be on the edge of the tire much,
because
that's where it destroys it the most. And also, it's a heat cycle thing, like as in, especially now with Pirelli, it's different than what it was with Dunlop. But yeah, with the Pirelli, when you're on that one side for a long time, is what actually destroys the tire, because the heat gets more and more on one side, and then it goes cold and then hot. So try to pick it up and take it into different positions of the tire to save it.
Yeah, right. There you go. Fuck, I wouldn't even know how to do that.
Like when you're watching on telly, you're like, you know, come on, just do this, do that. But like, you're obviously tires and this.
Armchair experts.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's so many of them, isn't there? So, but tires.
It's a big thing, isn't it?
It is.
Unfortunately.
Would you like if Moto 2 or 3 introduced changing of the tires when it rains or dries out, instead of obviously like a red flag? That's at Ben_Rothberg.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Although I don't think we have the resources to do it.
Mm.
Like, as in, it would be too much chaos, you know. MotoGP can do it because they have that extra bike, remember? You know, so
yeah,
they can just jump on
the resources would be impossible to have two bikes.
And there's what, 30? Is there 35 bikes out there in Moto 3?
Massive, isn't it?
Well, imagine doing that at Phillip Island as well. You got the back, the pits, not everyone's at the front, so you couldn't do it. You'll be taking out spectators.
Yeah, it wouldn't work, would it? We saw it at Superbikes this year. Superbikes that had a pit stop in the race.
Yeah, mandatory.
And that was super interesting watching that because like it's a full pit stop, like taking the tires off. You never do that in MotoGP.
It's always swap bikes. It'd be interesting to see what they'll do this year because for tire degradation after the
line, resurfacing
really, really bad.
Well, they did it. Yeah. They did a mandatory one, I think 2013 when Marquez got black flags.
I think they might have to do it, to be honest with you, because the tire wear so bad at Australia GP apparently now. With the Pirellis, we don't know if it will last. Although maybe they bring the harder compound for us, but difficult.
Seriously.
Yeah, that was a big talking point at Supers.
Yeah, although, it was.
That super bikes, they needed to take out that time limit. Okay, it should be whoever's the fastest. The team's the fastest.
Yeah, true.
No, I didn't like that. No. You have to wait, yeah.
I know, it's like a...
But that's cool.
It's up the pinnacle of... Yeah, it's up the pinnacle of motorsport, and it's like...
Exactly.
You know, you just got to trust the mechanics to do the right thing.
Well, it's like F1. Mm. It's interesting, because it's up to the team then. You know? The team get to play a role in that part, you know?
Yeah, in the win.
I think it's cool, yeah.
It's Phillip Island always. There's always something. There's always a mandatory pit stop. Yeah, the race gets cancelled.
The rain, the wind. Rain.
Always something interesting, that's for sure.
Flooded. It's just, yeah, there's always something, isn't it? It's crazy. At Shakit since 86, how fast is too fast? Is there a point where you're going too fast?
Never too fast.
Yeah, that's a dumb question.
Well, I guess we made it to be. Might say the different, but I couldn't tell you right now.
Yeah, nah, I like it. At CMAC993, what's the best part about being in the MotoGP paddock? You're allowed to say the women.
Let's see. I reckon... I think traveling to every country, that's just special, yeah. So, like you said, not many people get to enjoy their job.
Yeah.
How can you complain traveling to 20 different countries and, you know, enjoying the life, racing bikes, doing things that you love? So I think it's just that. Like MotoGP itself, it's obviously cool, but I think the main part about it is traveling to every country, and that's what makes MotoGP special. Probably also the crowds. The crowds are really awesome.
Oh, that's a very good answer, Joe. Yeah. Well done. That's very good.
Nah, but really, yeah. It's like they lift you up. You know, there's 300,000 people out there watching.
It's amazing feeling.
It's pretty special when you have that many people watching.
It's amazing, and it's good for you to have that home Grand Prix, because there would be a lot of few riders out there that wouldn't get that. I mean, like obviously the Colombians wouldn't get that. So that's a special thing for you. And there's only, four riders in the paddock that are Aussie, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, who's got the best facilities? What track's got the best facilities for riders?
Probably Qatar.
Oh, okay, really?
That checks out.
I guess they got all the money, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Probably get lifted in via Merck or something like that.
It's like a shopping mall.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. This year was spectacular. Yeah. TVs everywhere, like coffee shops everywhere. Like there was a Starbucks there. Like,
that's crazy.
Shit. Yeah.
Do you stay there at the track when you're...
Nah.
Okay.
Hotel about 20 minutes away always.
Yeah.
And what's the other one? So like favourite track to go to, tire, like, obviously besides Phillip Island.
Besides Phillip Island, Indonesia.
So
you always get a villa and then you just... I rent a scooter for like $5 a day and then I'll take the scooter like 20 minutes before the session and just go over and just for the ready to ride, you know what I mean? Like, as in that, I'll go over with the scooter, you know, like, you put a helmet on, you just go, you know? It's like you ride the scooter straight into your office, get dressed and go ride bikes. Yeah.
That's so cool.
And
what's
the
it like?
Go chase monkeys around.
Awesome. You did touch on that before the pod. Yeah. What's Indonesia like? Like, is it nice facilities? Is it like, is there lots of hotel rooms? Because we've been looking at, like, obviously going on a few overseas tracks next year. I really want to go to Thailand, but everyone says it's like in the middle of nowhere.
When I recommend people to go, always it's like the Asia route. So it's, you know, Thailand, Indonesia, because I think it's way better environment, racing, bikes and enjoying the outside of racing as well than what it would be in Europe, for example.
Yep.
For me, like it's so special, the international race is so much fun. Everyone loves it.
Yeah.
Well, it's easier for us to get to as well.
Yeah, exactly. Villa's cheap. Like, what more can you ask for, you know?
Yeah, exactly right.
I feel like the flyways always pull up funny results as well. It's always just that little bit different.
Well, it's the track that Europeans didn't grow up riding, do they?
Yeah.
You know, because you think of someone like in Jerez. And it's different to us in Phillip Island, right? Because maybe I've ridden there 5 times, 6 times before MotoGP in my life.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
In some of the Spanish, they will have ridden the tracks literally since they're probably 5-6 years old. And when I mean, maybe they ride there 4 or 5 times in that year. So 4 or 5 times for 10, 15 years is a lot.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
man, for sure.
They know every little bit of that track.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, well, it's not even that, because I can finally do so many laps, you'd think it wouldn't make a difference, but it definitely makes a difference.
Yeah, 100%. You know,
for sure, it has to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you're doing that.
If you have your local track in your house, you're obviously going to be better than someone that comes
of course, yeah.
maybe only 10 times in their life, you know.
Yeah, repetition, so. That's all it is, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like living on the doorstep of Phillip Island. You might get 2 laps in because it won't rain.
Exactly, exactly. But you have 2 laps more than the others, wouldn't you? So.
But that's right. Yeah. Exactly. All right, last one for the – I was about to say the hot takes. At joe.marinello.
Oh, that's surprising.
Should we get him in to ask it?
What did you ask, Joe? Go on, don't get his camera shy.
No, don't take his mic.
I'll take Daniel's. The people want to know, Joel, when are you getting a bulldog? That's the real question.
The question behind this.
Yeah, tell us the backstory.
Yeah, so the backstory is that I really, really want to get a dog because that's the thing I miss the most about having in Europe. But everyone's trying to convince me not, but I just love bulldogs and I want a bulldog so bad. And yeah, so I'm just trying to convince everyone around me to get a bulldog, but it's just not working at this stage. I told everyone I'm ordering it in January when I get back there and it's going to be there.
It's like a part.
But I'm not too certain because I don't know what I'm going to do when I come back for like 4 or 5 months. So it's a touchy one. I've got to figure it out because I was looking at like house city and stuff. It wasn't that bad. It was like €6, €8 a day. I'm like, oh, it's not that bad. I'm like, oh, if I have to leave the bulldog with someone else and whatever, someone else falls in love with my bulldog.
Well, it's like Lewis Hamilton travels with his bulldog.
Yeah, exactly. But I probably have to wait until I'm in MotoGP and traveling with private jet before.
The team can pay for the dog's travel. I think that's fair enough.
You know? So I want to get a bulldog named Javi.
Okay.
Javi's like the Spanish name that's really common.
Yeah.
I want that for my bulldog.
Okay, yeah. Cool. It's something to aim for. I like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, we'll endorse that.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, yeah, 100%.
We'll sponsor your bulldog. We'll spray paint Motorsport Republic or something.
Little sticker.
I had a bulldog before that was named Kato for KDM, obviously.
Okay.
And that's why I want to get a bulldog.
Yeah. All right. I like it.
I love it.
Beautiful.
And they're super easy to look after. They sleep all day, don't they?
So they do, yeah.
Take for a walk for 5 minutes, Dewey, and they'll just sleep, you know. So what better the dog do you want, yeah?
I think that's it, boys.
Yeah, the boys are freezing cold already.
Yeah, they're all staring at us.
Yeah, hurry up, let's go. Yeah.
I think Joey wants a beer in a palm.
Oh, well,
that's right. What he
wants. Gotcha. Yeah. Well, help yourself.
That's what they call it.
All right, well, thanks, Joel. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks, man.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.